On today's episode of the Trial Run Podcast, we recap the NFC and AFC Championship games. We preview the Super Bowl. We talk about LeBron passing Kobe in all-time points list. We talk about NCAA men's basketball, and Brennan is sulking because his team's a major disappointment. All that and more on today's episode of the Trial Run Podcast. Let's go. Brennan, the NFL season, it's coming to a close, and that means the football season is coming to a close. This past weekend, we saw the second and third last games of the year, with our final game, this being the Super Bowl, coming up this coming weekend.
Don't forget about that Pro Bowl today.
The Pro Bowl today that nobody's ever going to watch. We have all sorts. We have the XFL coming up. Nobody forget that. Let's not.
I actually will not forget that. I will watch it.
Let's not sleep on that. But in terms of the topic at hand, the NFC and AFC Championship games, what an underwhelming last three football games that we're going to see this year. Two blowouts. The Tennessee Titans obviously getting handled by the Kansas City Chiefs. It didn't appear that way at the very beginning. We thought the Titans might have a chance, and we saw them get thoroughly handled by a better team in pretty much every capacity of the game. And then the Packers, Jesus, like I know the 49ers are a good team this year. I'm not trying to disrespect them, but you have a superior quarterback, and
If
history is any indication, you would think that would be enough to at least make it a competitive game. But my God, like they have been absolutely blasted two separate times this season, once during the regular season and then, of course, once in the NFC Championship game. And I don't even know, the Packers, were they the worst, whatever they were, 13-3 team of all time? Because, I mean,
I never heard anything about them throughout the regular season.
Like, yeah, because nobody took them seriously, and it looks like it's for good reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you mentioned, it's especially disappointing that these two games were such blowouts, because we had been talking last week on the podcast how great the NFL playoffs had been up until this point. A lot of intrigue,
yeah, what
especially
a letdown
with the Titans. But yeah, no. Titans did not come through. Their run game got shut down. Frank Clark was correct when he said that. Well, I mean, he did say that Derrick Henry wasn't that good of a runner, so that part's not correct. But he was correct in saying that the Chiefs would be able to shut him down. They were very effective in doing that. In the end, yeah, two blowouts. But hopefully that means that the Super Bowl should be a great matchup.
It should be. No, it should be. We will see the 49ers, which the key to that team is their defense and their defensive line, which is going to be an excellent matchup against, obviously, a high-powered Andy Reid-coached offense who is led by Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and all the players that we know, their household names now because of how dynamic they've been.
I almost said that this is going to be a matchup of two polar opposite offenses, but that's not even true. They are both like new in their approach to the game, but the way in which they do it is completely different. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs bring in more of that spread type offense to the NFL. They've got speed all over the place. The 49ers are a little bit more old school in their approach. They, you know, they run with some fullbacks and H-backs, but they're completely reinventing how to run an offensive system with Kyle Shanahan and all these shifts that you're seeing, all this window dressing. They set it up beautifully, and Kyle Shanahan's a beautiful offensive mind.
Window dressing, H-back, you're hitting all the high notes of football season right now.
That's right.
Love to see it. Did you break down the film?
I honestly should. I should get out the X's and O's. But as fun as the Chiefs' offense is to watch with those weapons that they have there, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes, obviously, as mentioned, I really do like watching the 49ers offense. It's a thing of beauty to see all the different intricacies that go into that offense.
And I think this offense has kind of it shielded Jimmy Garoppolo a little bit, because I think
he's not that good.
I mean, I think he's had an underwhelming season.
You know, it's not that he's not good.
Tom Brady 2.0.
He's a game manager. He really is. He gets the job done. He makes usually the smart decision. And isn't required to make that spectacular play in order to win the game.
I mean, he's just like his mentor.
See, I could fight you on this all day long. Tom Brady is he's an above-average talent, not elite, but just a beautiful football player. The best we've ever seen.
I mean, that's
smartest man ever.
What I just talked about, talking about X's and O's and breaking down the film and everything, you just went polar opposite to that by saying he's a beautiful football player.
He's not just a game manager. He is the smartest quarterback ever to be seen in the NFL.
Peyton Manning?
Smarter than Peyton Manning.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, obviously.
You don't think it has anything to do with the fact that he's associated with Bill Belichick?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, that's part of it. But wow, we're really going off on a tangent here. Of course, Bill Belichick has to do with Tom Brady.
Well, we have nothing to talk about, so I need to fight you on something.
Hey, we have the Pro Bowl. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we have the Pro Bowl to talk about, which is going to take me 2 seconds to say what I'm going to say is, who cares?
I will not be watching or listening or paying attention.
The one thing that I will say about the Pro Bowl is that I think, in terms of the athletes, this has to be the worst game.
Xavier Rhodes?
Well, this has to be just... Well, I'm saying worst in terms of, like, I don't know why on earth I would want to participate in it as an athlete.
No. Because it gets worse and worse every year, I think.
Football is a game where it's so physical, and if you're not... If everybody's not going 100%, if somebody's going a little bit harder than the other person, then that person that's not trying as hard is going to get themselves hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, nobody wants to try in these games. So that in the NBA and MLB, yeah, it's fine because, you know, there's a lot less chance of getting hurt and nobody tries in the NBA All-Star game. That seems to be kind of a consensus. But in terms of football, where it's physical contact on every single play, this game just makes no sense to me. And I don't even know why it's even a thing, because – you talk about, like, the collective bargaining agreement, all this stuff about trying to limit players getting hurt. How about we just eliminate the game that doesn't mean anything? It's an exhibition game. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I cannot imagine. I was thinking about this earlier this week. I cannot imagine the NFL is making money off of this game. I don't even understand really why.
Oh,
they're doing
I'm sure
it.
They are.
You think so? Who watches it? Like, they're not getting ratings.
Somebody, there's some. I don't even know what TV station is hosting this game or is.
They're just paying a
is televising this game, but the NFL. If I know anything about the NFL, is that the more football they show, the better.
That's true.
If they could do it, they would show football however many, 365 times a year if they could.
Yeah.
Because everybody loves football and everybody's going to watch it. So despite me and you not watching it, there's going to be somebody that's watching it and somebody that's lining the NFL's pockets with it.
I don't know. I agree. I think this game is really, really worthless. And it does seem, though, I understand that player safety has become more of an issue as the years go by, but it does seem that in the past, these Pro Bowls were a lot more like competitive and actually at least somewhat fun to watch. I mean, they're never going to put forth the effort that they do during the regular season, but recently it's just completely gone off the deep end, and there's no trying whatsoever. I watched a glimpse of last year's Pro Bowl. I saw like a couple plays here and there, and literally like it was as if like the play was blown dead like within 3 seconds of the whistle going off, because basically the linemen would just stand up. And the only way that someone would get tackled is, like, they would wrap, they'd, like, hug them up, and the refs would blow the play dead. It was, like...
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. What's the point? Because...
Right. It's not football at that point.
Yeah, it's just not enjoyable to watch, and I'm not sure... I understand from the NFL's perspective, I'm sure it makes them money, but from a player's perspective, I don't understand. There has to be some other way to recognize the best of the best in some other capacity besides playing in some useless game.
Yeah.
And while we're on the topic, the best of the best, allegedly the best of the best, because you mentioned Xavier Rhodes and how big of a scam the Pro Bowl voting is. And that goes across all sports. That's not just specific to the Pro Bowl.
It's a popularity contest.
It is. And the fact that Xavier Rhodes, who's one of the worst corners by the numbers this year. Statistically, by the numbers, he's been one of the worst corners of all corners who have played, I think, 300-plus snaps this year. And he ranked, like, I think there was 120 corners, and he ranked, like, 114th or something like that. The fact that he's in the Pro Bowl is absolutely laughable, and just it proves our point more that this game is a complete joke.
Yeah, no, it really is.
Our boy Antonio Brown's back at it, Brennan.
Part what?
Part 560. Part 500, yes. We have taken a long hiatus, actually, from talking about Antonio Brown. There was a stretch there where I think we talked about him on, like, four or five consecutive shows.
We thought we were in the clear, you know.
We thought we were in the clear, but... And we have been steering clear of him, despite there's been some newsworthy stuff that he's done recently. We just flat ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's back in the news, because if you've seen that he had an arrest warrant, then you've seen that he turned himself in.
Yep.
And you've seen his godforsaken mugshot. Everything is really coming to fruition for Antonio Brown, and we're seeing it all play out on national television. And I want to get your take on this, because I think my take might run a little bit counter to what you're going to say. So this whole Antonio Brown fiasco, what do you make of it?
The whole thing? That is a lot to unpack there.
I mean, the whole
from
thing.
From, like, beginning to end? Or
I'm saying just the demise in general.
What do I think of it?
What do you think of the fact that this is where it's come to, where he's now allegedly, I think it was assault and battery that he got picked up for, and now he's going to be, I don't know, I think he's on $100,000 bail, which he posted So yeah, a lot to unpack here, but this whole thing has been just a crapshoot from the very beginning.
Well, this is kind of a joke, but there honestly might be some seriousness to it. That Vontaze Burfict hit, what, in 2000, was that 16, 15, something like that? That just rocked the crap out of him. I mean, ever since then, he's been crazy. So I wonder if those type of injuries actually have, like, affected his mental health. And I know one of the things that the court has ordered him to do with this arrest warrant is
see a therapist,
a mental health evaluation. That'll be very interesting to see how that comes back. I would not be surprised in the slightest to discover that there are some issues with that man's mind, whether that has to do with what's happened from his football career or if it's just always been there from the beginning and it's now just rearing its ugly head. There's no – I can't say this. I am 90% confident that based on what we've seen from these past couple of months that this man has something wrong with him. This is not a – completely
this is not just a lack of judgment.
Right, this is not just a guy being stupid. He is clearly there's something wrong with
him. Something misfiring.
Yes. And I say interesting, but it's interesting in a horrifying way to find out what that will be with Antonio Brown.
For as much as everybody loves the product of the NFL, and I'm just as guilty of this as everybody else, this is the consequences of football. I think this is I'm going to...
You think it's like a junior Seau type
deal? I'm going to go out and just say it. I think that this is the direct responsibility of football. I know he's had some issues in the past going all the way back to his college career. He's had some lack of judgment, and he's been not always accountable for what he's done. But at this point, this is outside of the realm of the things that he's already done.
Yeah.
And just the sporadic nature of everything that has happened to him, and now eventually leading to him, whatever it was, beating up a guy on his property or whatever the storyline was, and now he's in jail or potentially going to prison, whatever it may be. This is all, in my opinion, the product of not only the football aspect of it, but the fame, the fortune, everything.
I was just about to say, I think there may be a part to this that has to do with the football, but I was just thinking, a lot of people get crazy when they get really popular, really famous.
But that's a part of football. Right. That's a part of it.
This was all taking place basically at the height of Antonio Brown's fame. You know, he was one of the, if not the best receiver.
On the cover of Madden.
Right. And then, you know, we've seen countless celebrities have this happen to them, whether it be drugs, whether it just be they go insane. Antonio Brown, obviously not immune to that. But no, I think it's... Now that I really think about it, I think it is a combination of those two.
Yeah, I think it's, like I said, it's football. And in football, this is something that we're going to see in the future that football is going to have to take responsibility for. I'm kind of getting tired of Roger Goodell flatly denying that.
He's an idiot.
Of him flatly denying that football plays a part in these things because it clearly does. And I'm just thinking of this right now, too. I don't know if you get these on your Instagram feed or your Twitter feed or whatever it may be. But I constantly get these NFL sponsored ads pop up on my Instagram feed, and it's essentially propaganda stating of all these rule changes that the NFL has made to limit player injuries or player damage. You know, it pops up on my Instagram feed, and it's a little video of, you know, explaining the blindside block rule, explaining the kickoff return wedge rule, all these things to quote unquote make football safer. But my thing is, how are you claiming to make football safer when in actuality you're denying the entire thing that you're trying to eliminate, essentially? If you're trying to eliminate something from football, it needs to be the CTE or whatever. And I don't know if you even can, but if you're flatly denying that it even exists, then how can you even combat it? So it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
it rubs me the wrong way.
This goes kind of back to those rule changes that we've discussed on this podcast, and they've been beaten to death throughout the media. But really, I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to you're either going to play football the way that it was meant to be played, or
you're not going
to
play at all.
The sport as we know it is not going to exist anymore. I mean, it might exist in some different fashion, but these rule changes are, frankly, I think, destroying the game. Whether you know, we have these controversy with the pass interferences calls. That's not as much to do with the big hits, but it can. And then, more importantly, those quarterback hit penalties, which have just gotten ridiculous at this point. It's destroying the game of football. And I understand player safety. I don't know if we could ever get to a point where we could have the right combination of rules and guidelines and safety equipment where we're going to eliminate these injuries. I think it's part of the game, an unfortunate part of the game, and we can do our best to limit it, but I don't think these rules are helping.
And I would agree with you, and that's not even the point that I'm trying to make. The point that I'm trying to make is the NFL needs to stand up, and they need to, just speaking from an ethical point of view, they need to stand up and they need to understand that this is causing injuries. And for them to turn a blind eye to it and suggest to young players and everybody else that this is not a thing, that this does not even exist, that's the part that bothers me. You can make all the rule changes you want. It's not going to take it out of the game, because more often than not, these types of injuries happen because of repeated blows to the head, not after one big hit or anything. So yeah. The repeated blows to the head part is not going to be eliminated from the game of football, because that is football. So I think at the very least, to your point, I would love to see football, quote unquote, like be played the way it's meant to be played. But I think if you're going to take that route, which I think is it's an actual possibility that they do that, or that they should do that. I don't think they actually will, but I think it should be within the realm of possibility that they just say, hey, this is football. But if you're going to take that route, you need to at least recognize the fact that, and preach to the fact that, hey, if you're going to play this game, you need to be able to deal with these consequences.
The really unfortunate thing about this whole situation, it's kind of a catch-22, but the better and better that football games will get, and more entertaining it will be, will require more and more training, more and more pushing of these athletes to dedicate their lives, getting bigger and faster and stronger. And the more and more that happens, the worse and worse I think these injuries are going to be, simply because you're going to have freaks of nature running full speed at each other.
And another freak of nature.
Right, and it's just going to get worse and worse if that is the route that they choose, just to let football be played as it is. So
I
don't know how to handle it, and frankly it makes me depressed just saying it, because football is far and away my favorite sport, and I don't want to see it, you know, go to the wayside.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. And let's turn our topic of conversation over to something a little bit lighter. We're going to talk about the National Basketball Association right now. We're going to talk about LeBron James passing Kobe Bryant for third all-time in the scoring list. We're not going to have the GOAT conversation, because I hate that conversation with a burning passion. What a crapshoot that is. And we've talked about LeBron's greatness, and I don't think there's anything to doubt that.
No.
And at this point, I don't want to have the GOAT conversation, so I'm just going to say, is he far and away the player of this century?
This century,
because the other argument would probably be Kobe Bryant, and right. He's passed him in every statistical category.
Yeah, after this passing and all-time scoring, he is, I think, in literally every major category is better than Kobe. And that's not to take away from Kobe, because Kobe is a generational superstar, a talent that I admire greatly. I loved watching Kobe play in the limited time that I got to see him. But yeah, no, I think as much as I dislike LeBron, because you know I do not like LeBron James, he is the best to do it in this century. And like you said, don't want to have that argument, who's the best. It's impossible to compare.
It's such a stupid argument.
You can't compare between generations. You can't compare between positions. They play, like him and Jordan play a different style of basketball. Him and Kobe play a different style
of basketball. It's an impossible
comparison. It's a useless
argument.
Just respect the talent that we've been seeing. Admire it. But LeBron is so good at what he does. An elite talent, as much as I hate to admit it, he is incredible.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, I think if there was going to be a comparison made that could be a direct comparison, it would be Kobe and Jordan closer than LeBron and Jordan.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree.
Just because of the style that they played, the generation gap is still there, but just because of the style they play and the rings, everything else, and how they went about their business, I think they're very comparable. Whereas LeBron and MJ or LeBron and Kobe, just not at all comparable as people or as players.
Not even from a like better standpoint, but from a style standpoint, LeBron is in a league of his own. Like
we've seen a guy of that caliber who, for the most part of his career, has been pass first, score second.
Mm-hmm. Looks like a tight end, but moves
like
a running back.
Yeah, he's built like a tight end, but moves like a point guard. Like he's unbelievable. The court vision, everything that we've seen from him has been, I mean, for as much as I, you know, you said you don't like LeBron, I wouldn't call myself a LeBron fan either. So as much as I may not like to say it, he is just simply unbelievable, and he's been a transcendent talent since day one.
But again, so is Kobe, so is Michael Jordan. They're all really good players with their own unique skill sets, and it's just been a pleasure to at least watch Kobe and LeBron in my lifetime.
Do we have the second coming of LeBron in our league right now?
Who are you talking about? Giannis?
You know who I'm talking about.
Giannis?
No. You know exactly who I'm talking about.
Oh, are you talking about...
He plays for the New Orleans Pelicans.
Oh, gosh.
He's a big, beefy fellow. Looks a lot like a tight end.
I actually didn't know where you were going with this one. Yeah, we will not mention his name on this podcast, but you already know who we're going to be talking about at home if you've been watching basketball in the slightest. Rookie,
yeah.
We'll just say this. Ready? Stocky build, rookie, been injured the past couple of months, plays for the Pelicans.
And had one of the great opening moments I've ever seen. I watched that Pelicans game. And his first game was absolutely electrifying. Mm-hmm. And I know you didn't watch it. I know you didn't see it. I know you probably don't want to hear
highlights.
It.
Saw the highlights.
But to go on a run like that, score 17 straight points, and get your team right back into the game after not playing well at all in the first half, simply unbelievable. And for as much as we've ripped on him because we hate the hype surrounding him and we hate all the media coverage and people, you know, that want to be near him or anything, his whole essence, if you will, we don't like that part of him. He's a good guy. He's a good kid.
He is.
He's an incredible talent.
We don't hate on him because of him. We hate on him because of what the media has portrayed.
And that's 100% correct. But we can't knock him for much longer if he's going to keep up on this pace, because his first couple of games have been very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And that first the scoring spurt that we saw in that first game, that had myself up in arms, and I was on my feet off the couch watching this kid play on national television.
Yeah, no doubt he's been impressive. I don't know.
And that was on a minutes restriction also, which is the bizarre part.
I'm a little concerned about his health long term. I'm not talking about what he has right now, but I think that kind of plays into what we might see out of Zion's career. I personally, again, we dislike him. I hope the best for him. I hope that he is a force in the league for years to come, provided that he is willing to put forth that talent. In other words, I don't want to see his career marred by injuries, but he just seems like the type of athlete where injuries could affect
creep
his
up
career.
On him. Yeah.
And I hope we don't see that, because he is very fun to watch. I think provided that he doesn't get marred by injuries, I think that's really the only thing slowing him down.
How about him being fat?
See, I don't buy that.
Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy do.
I know, but he's kind of LeBron-ish in the sense that he has that big build, but he is a springy athlete. That man can, you know, freaking touch the backboard with his...
With his head.
Yeah, with his, like, waistline based on how he can jump. Really incredible.
Really thick.
Really, really thick.
Really thick with, like, 5 to 6 Cs.
A lot of people, Pelican fans, I know, have been really advocating for him to get back in the lineup, but the Pelicans have gone the route of easing him back in. How do you feel about that?
That's a smart play.
You think so? Yeah.
That's 100% the smart play. Longevity-wise, that's what needs to be done. And we saw the press conference after the game where he said, obviously I'm a 19-year-old kid, which, Brennan, his birthday is 2 weeks before ours.
That's insane.
If that's even believable to you. But... He said he answered all the questions the right way. He essentially said, "Hey, I'm a 19-year-old kid. Of course, I wanted to win that game. I was not thinking about longevity in the moment, but in the end of it, Elvin Gentry has the final say. He took him out. Probably the smart thing to do, much to the gall of NBA fans. Everybody wanted to see him finish that game and win that game, which they did not do. But you know, unbelievable first performance. I'm not totally disappointed that Elvin Gentry took him out, because I recognize that it is what was best for him at the time.
It kind of reminds me of this whole Zion situation. Oh, shoot, I said his name. Wow, we really ruined it. We screwed the pooch on this one, Nate.
No, you did. Let's get that straight. Let's get that straight right now.
This whole Pelicans player situation kind of reminds me of how the running back position has been approached recently. You know, people a lot of times talk about what's the number of touches a running back has in his career. And they kind of handled it that way. And we really haven't seen it that much in the NBA. A little bit more now with load management and that whole deal. But it kind of feels that way with this certain Pelican player. They're really limiting him, and, you know, putting him in key moments, taking him out in others. It's just interesting to watch. Personally, I don't want to see that happen in the NBA moving forward. I'd rather see people play. Call me old school, but... I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, if you like to see people play, then Kawhi Leonard's not your guy, and that's who we're going to be talking about next. Kawhi Leonard, load management king, gets his first career triple-double, and that's a little bit surprising to me.
That's baffling.
Not?
I was so baffled when I saw that. Yeah. I mean, this man
bizarre
single-handedly ended two dynasties.
Yeah.
He's restored balance to the league.
Yep.
You know, arguably the best player in the NBA as of right now. And you're going to tell me that that was his first triple-double?
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. That's the bizarre part about that is that's not even the most surprising Kawhi news that we've heard this week.
That is true.
Not even close, actually.
Yeah,
no. Not even close, because pictures have surfaced of Kawhi Leonard frequenting himself in, how you say,
a gentleman's club
with a certain individual seems to be throwing it back on him. And
quite vigorously.
Yeah, quite vigorously.
He was anything but a gentleman then.
Yeah, and he has a wife and a girlfriend and I think a kid on the way or a kid here. So not a great look for Kawhi, especially since he's kind of been the king of staying away from the spotlight. That's not going to do him any favors.
Also not a good look when, you know, people are kind of ragging on him for taking games off because of this whole load management. And, you know, you're spending your nights at a strip club, like, kind of brings into question, like, really? I mean, I guess they're not comparable, but when you just, you get all the hype going with it, people are like, really, dude, like, come on, play some basketball.
I think the big winner in this scenario is New Balance.
Yeah, he was wearing a New Balance sweatshirt.
Kawhi was wearing the biggest New Balance logo I've ever seen on a shirt when he was getting
press is good press.
Yeah, when he was getting when he was getting fondled by this dancer, I shall say. This exotic dancer, and you know, all of a sudden New Balance is in the limelight, and they're all over Twitter. New Balance has got to be thrilled about this. They should tell Kawhi.
Right,
yeah, that's good marketing. Any press is good press. They should tell Kawhi to do that at every city he goes to, and make sure there's a cameraman right in his grill, because that is free marketing. I'm taking a marketing class right now. I'm here to tell you that is exactly what you want as your brand label.
Write that down, marketing students. Have your NBA players go to strip clubs and wear those logos.
Yep. Second half coming up next. This has been the Trial Run Podcast. Second half, Trial Run Podcast time for This Week in History with your boy Brennan Bevins. Take it away, buddy.
All right, for the first time ever, I actually have two for This Week in History, and really they go hand in hand if you think about it.
Oh, yes.
I'll let you make the connection there. Spoiler, there is no connection. I just wanted to say that. All right, ready? We're going to take it all the way back to 1837. This week in history, Michigan became a state. So fire up for Michigan, for our beautiful state. The UP, we can take it or leave it. But
the beautiful Mount Pleasant.
Yeah, the beautiful Mount Pleasant, no doubt.
Without Michigan becoming a state, we probably wouldn't have gotten Mount P. So God bless.
It's neither a mountain nor is it pleasant, but we still love it.
Yeah.
All right,
who named this?
Then we're gonna journey back to a shorter time ago, 1998, when a certain staff secretary, Monica Lewinsky, got a little handsy with good old William Clinton.
Billy
boy, had a little rough patch there, but, you know.
Looking back at it, that might have been the greatest time in our country's history,
I think we were all really united as a nation at that point.
Yeah, probably.
We were all rallying around Bill, you know.
Yeah, and then Billy, he left. He had to go.
Billy
had to go.
It was time for him to dip.
Yeah, he bounced.
There you go.
How did those connect at all?
I don't know. I was just...
You were just...
I was raffing.
Yeah, you were off the top, I think, and you weren't very good at it.
Yeah, you know. Well, we have our moments on this show. Our 8 listeners will be very disappointed with that, I'm sure.
Yeah, no kidding. NCAA men's basketball, let's talk about it. Brennan actually hit what anybody could just dream of yesterday. He watched two high-level college basketball games yesterday.
Both live. It was great.
Both live, both in person.
Two different cities.
Yeah, one at that school down south in Ann Arbor and another one right here in beautiful Mount Pleasant. And he got to see the better of those two teams win.
I tell you what, Central, no doubt, very impressive performance. We'll talk about
forced
them.
28 turnovers.
Did they really?
They forced 28 turnovers.
That is hilarious. We're going to talk about them in a second, but first I do have to get to Michigan because I did watch that game with my lovely girlfriend, Brooke.
Oh, Jesus.
And frankly, Michigan...
Has Michigan been the most disappointing team so far this year?
I will say...
Especially after the way they started.
I will say no, and here's why. Michigan had little expectations going into this year, I believe. I think even if Beeline had come back, you're looking at a middle-of-the-pack Big Ten team with the pieces that they lost. Then you have a new coach in Juwan Howard coming in. Frankly, I was expecting an NIT, maybe a bubble team out of this team. But just the fact that they started off so well, they beat Gonzaga, they beat UNC, who ended up not being good. And frankly, actually, UNC is my most disappointing team of this year.
Yeah, that's not – that's yeah, that's a good point.
And then they beat Iowa State, so a really good stretch. We had all of the hopes and expectations after that Battle for Atlantis tournament. And now they've come into Big Ten play. A very competitive Big Ten, but they've just really crapped the bed this past month or so.
Yeah, they've been very bad.
And it's looking again like they're going to be right on the bubble, maybe not make the tournament. I wouldn't be surprised at all. So I'm disappointed, but I'm not surprised if you had shown me this at the beginning of the year at least.
Yeah, I don't watch Michigan basketball. You know that.
Yeah.
So I don't have an opinion to weigh in on.
Well, frankly, it also doesn't help that Isaiah Livers has been out the whole year, and he just got re-injured again last night. So.
And that's facts.
That is facts. But
he got re-injured?
Yeah. He got re-injured.
That's terrible.
And that's when Illinois went on a run again. So that's very good. But like we said, good news is Central did take the W yesterday.
They did. First place in the MAC West.
Got to see the second half of that game. Yep, first place in the MAC West. They are... you know, poising themselves to be highly positioned in the MAC tournament. And frankly, I think that bodes very well for their tournament chances.
Oh, it really does. This, what we thought was going to be a runaway train in Akron in the MAC this year, because Akron looked fantastic, almost beat Louisville, narrowly lost to what at the time was an undefeated Liberty team. They looked fantastic. Recently, they've been struggling. They only won by 2 yesterday. I don't remember who they played. They played some MAC school. I think it was Ohio. And they barely won. They lost their MAC game before that. So they're struggling right now. We get them in a couple of weeks. Yeah, we get them in a couple of weeks, so it'll be a good measuring stick.
Yeah.
Is if we get one of the top 4 seeds and we automatically qualify for Cleveland and we go to Cleveland, anything can happen in this league, and you know that.
Right.
And we know that. So what I'm saying is I know we got handled by Buffalo. We were missing a starter. That's neither here nor there. That's in the past. We'll get them again. We'll get to see them on the road. This is something that this team, which looked like it struggled a bit in the beginning, they go in spurts. That win yesterday was a big win. It gives them, you know, all the momentum going into what's going to be a tough week, 2 road games this week. Lots of things going on, and I think that this bodes well for just going forward in the future. And we might – I'm hoping and praying, Brennan. This is my one sincere hope and prayer. By the time I graduate CMU, I want to see either or both. I want to see a New Year's Six bowl game, and I want to see an NCAA tournament.
Keep hoping and praying.
And I want to see an NCAA tournament berth, and I'm telling you –
You could see that one.
And I'm telling you the NCAA tournament berth is a lot more likely than the first one. So lots of things going on.
I discovered this past weekend that – spoken word, a promise in spoken word, if it's recorded, counts as a contract in the state of Michigan. So I'm going to put you on the spot here and say, on air for the airwaves, if Central goes this year to the tournament, can you commit yourself to going to that game?
I will be at that game. That is a spoken word. I will be at that game.
It is now an official contract.
I will be at that game, and I'm telling you. And how about this right now? Central, who narrowly lost to Robert Morris, who you were ripping on earlier in the year, is currently in Joe Lenardi's brackets right now as a 16. They are in the conversation. So CMU is right there, I'm telling you.
Okay, I would personally love to see it. I don't know if I can commit myself to going to that game if it's in like Anaheim or something, but I'll certainly be cheering them on the whole way, that's for sure.
And how about you have listed on our show sheet here, could we have a tourney team in Mount Pleasant? And I don't want to neglect or fail to mention, I think I'd be remiss if I failed to mention how good the CMU women's team has been once again this year.
So yeah, it might not even come from the men.
Yeah, they've already had 2 tournament berths in the last 2 years. They lost a bunch of star power last year with Presley Hudson and Raina Frost. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they're right back in the mix. They're firmly in control of the MAC right now. And they're looking like a team that could be poised for another tournament run, which I'm so happy to see. And I will say, yesterday I caught the second half of the women's game, loudest I've ever heard McGurk. The Townies really showed up for that game.
And frankly, it's impressive considering that they do have a new coach.
They do, yeah.
That it's carried over into this next year. That's great to see for the Mount Pleasant community and the Townies as a whole.
And the Townies really rally behind that team, I'm telling you. The students seem to like the men's team a little bit more, but the Townies rally behind that team, and I can't even blame them. That team has earned every single bit of the respect that they're getting. you can't be a mid-major team making two consecutive tournament runs and poised for a third without getting that kind of love. So
go Lady Chips.
Yeah, Lady Chips rocking out. They've been fantastic. With the season, let's continue on the men's side, though. With the season being as brazy as it's been, this NCAA men's basketball season has been absolutely bonkers. Whole bunch of losses from the top teams. We talked about this last time. Teams making a splash in March and potentially there being a bunch of upsets, which we really hope to see. What mid-major schools, in your opinion, could make a splash in March? We're hoping our chips are there, but if they're not, what's another team that you could list?
Honestly, right now, before I even get into that, I've been doing some research on the
matter. We've been watching our fair share of basketball, so a mid-major basketball.
I would like to draw a special attention to the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference.
The MEAC.
The MEAC, if you will.
The fake MAC.
Because not a single team, not one team in that conference is above 500.
That's actually unbelievable.
And that is...
And there's going to be a tournament team out of that conference.
That's frankly an impressive feat, so I just wanted to give them a quick shout-out. In terms of those teams that I think could make a splash, first I'm going to go with Winthrop from the Big South.
Winthrop's always dangerous.
The Big South in general is always a pretty dangerous conference, and this year they took Duke to the wire. Well, I mean, the final score was a little less close. It was a 13-point game, but it was a close game throughout, and then they beat a ranked St. Mary's team. So they've done a little in the non-conference, and then in terms of their actual conference games, they've been flying through that. I always like to see how the Ivy League schools do. So whoever comes out of that conference,
your Princeton Tigers.
Princeton is looking hot right now. So is Yale. So I'm excited to see what we can see out of those boys. Another team to mention, Loyola Chicago's right back up on top. But frankly, out of the Missouri Valley, I'm liking Northern Iowa right now. They're 16-3. They're one game back in the Missouri Valley. I would not be surprised in the slightest to see Northern Iowa have another run in them. Do you got any teams to share with the class?
Well, we happened to watch a lot of Ohio Valley conference basketball last week. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, Austin Peay was a team that I'm looking out for because they have been...
They're tied for first.
They're tied for first in the OVC. And then also, I believe, Murray State also right there. But we've come to expect that from them.
Yeah, no kidding.
Tennessee State also in the mix,
mm-hmm.
which that conference, the Ohio Valley Conference, that is my adopted conference this year. That's what I'm telling you.
I do love that conference.
That conference is fantastic, and I'm adopting that as my own, second only behind the MAC. And, not in the MAC, Central Michigan, because I don't even want to mention the other teams in the MAC in this conversation because Akron would certainly be up there. And as much as I hate to say it, Buffalo would probably be up there as well. But, yeah, all these conferences, with as much mid-major basketball as we're going to see coming down the stretch, especially in championship weekend, we're going to learn a lot more about these teams that we've never heard of or may not pay attention to very often. So, hopefully, I'm hoping for more fantastic mid-major basketball. But for now, I'm going to say Murray State, Austin Peay, Tennessee State, all those teams.
Well, breaking news, we have another conference, the Southwestern Athletic Conference, that does not have a single team above 500.
How is that possible?
Congratulations.
How is it possible there are two conferences that way?
I have two more teams off the top of my – well, not off the top of my head, off the top of my sheet that I would like to mention in consideration. Stephen F. Austin, they're a –
Yeah, beating Duke. That would be – yeah, that's a good mention.
They're a well-established team, a tournament team, that is. And then another team that I love to see, and they're doing really well this year, is East Tennessee State.
Yep.
They've always they've made a couple splashes in the tournament of late, and I could see that happening again this year. And they come from a solid conference, the Southern Conference, with the likes of Mercer and Samford and Wofford and UNC Greensboro. So that would be fun to see.
Would be very fun to see. Let's wrap up the show the way we always wrap up this show. Time for our Who's Your Daddy of the Week, and I'll let you go first while I filibuster and think of mine.
Great. For my Daddy of the Week, I'm going to say winning is Michigan Athletic Program's Daddy of the Week, and frankly, I'm going to just go out on a limb and say this is the daddy of the decade.
Because yeah, it really has been.
Michigan Athletics, ever since I've started watching you, I think it's my fault somehow, because right when I started watching Michigan Athletics in 2008, everything just seems to have gone to shit. And frankly, I'm sick of it, and I want a championship now. But we're not going to see that.
At least you're not asking too much.
Right. I don't think so. I may not see it for another decade. So, that's that. That's my Daddy of the Week. Ended on a sour note.
Yeah, very good. Well, you'll love to see it.
You do.
Let's see. Central Michigan women's basketball is the MAC's Daddy of the Week this week.
Daddy.
It is they run the Mid-American Conference. They've been running it for a couple of years now, and they're going to continue to run it. They're going to make another tournament. You can take that to the freaking bank, and we're going to have two, not one, but two tournament teams this year in Mount Pleasant, and we love to see it.
We do love to see that. I would be here for that, absolutely.
We'll be back next week. This has been another episode of the Try Run Podcast. Take care.